The Holy Gospel according to Matthew, the 10th chapter. Jesus said to the 12, "Whoever welcomes you welcomes me, and whoever welcomes me welcomes the one who sent me. Whoever welcomes a prophet in the name of a prophet will receive a prophet's reward, and whoever welcomes a righteous person in the name of a righteous person will receive the reward of the righteous. And whoever gives even a cup of cold water to one of these little ones in the name of a disciple, truly I tell you, none of these will lose their reward." The Gospel of the Lord. I'm pretty sure this morning's gospel reading is the shortest of our entire three-year lectionary. Those verses from the 10th chapter of Matthew feel more like something of a gospel snippet, a few random teachings of Jesus to his apostles on the topic of welcome. But Jesus' words today actually aren't random. They conclude the several chapters from the Gospel of Matthew we've been attending to over the past 3 weeks, Matthew's account of Jesus' early public ministry. Jesus has been on the scene and hard at work for a while now, doing a lot of teaching and a lot of healing. Large crowds are following Jesus, desperate for his help, which he offers graciously and generously. Disciples are also following Jesus. Ordinary men, fishermen, tax collectors, and the like, with ordinary names: Matthew, Simon, Andrew, James, John, Judas, Philip, Thaddeus. Jesus has not only called this unremarkable group to follow him, but he has also sent them out into the world with rather remarkable work to do, commissioning them to go proclaim the good news that the kingdom of heaven has come near, to cure the sick, raise the dead, cleanse the lepers, cast out demons. As I believe I noted a few weeks ago when we heard that commissioning story, it's quite the job description. Last week, we heard that not only is it a big job, it's a job requiring significant sacrifices. Jesus went into some detail about the hardships his disciples will face, how his believers will find even their familial relationships disrupted. A man set against his father, a daughter against her mother. Then Jesus offered these words, perhaps meant to be comforting, but unsettling nonetheless. "Those who find their life will lose it, and those who lose their life for my sake will find it." Jesus' teaching takes a bit of a turn with the verses we heard today. From tough talk about the demands of discipleship, Jesus moves to a series of sayings about welcome. I'd like to focus today on the first saying: "Whoever welcomes you welcomes me." I want you to really hear that. Jesus said, "Whoever welcomes you welcomes me." Now, we preach and teach a lot about seeing Christ in our neighbor. Think about that very familiar passage we get later in Matthew, in the 25th chapter, in which Jesus offers a parable about the final judgment. "I was hungry and you gave me food. The Son of Man will say to the people at his right hand, I was thirsty, and you gave me something to drink. The righteous will become confused at this, according to Jesus. When was it that we saw you hungry and gave you food, saw you naked and gave you clothing, saw you sick or in prison and visited you? They will ask. Remember what comes next? Truly, I tell you, just as you did it to one of the least of these who are members of my family, you did it to me. Those words from Jesus, along with many of his other teachings, such as the parable of the Good Samaritan, drive our ministry to those in need. We meet Christ in our neighbors. We believe that we are serving Christ by serving them. But today's gospel reading reminds us that it also works in reverse. Yes, we meet Christ in our neighbors, but our neighbors also meet Christ in us. In Jesus' words, whoever welcomes you welcomes me. Just think about that for a moment. We baptized children of God are to be Christ for other people. Wonder how you can possibly fulfill such a calling? Well, the story Tony Campolo, a well-known Baptist preacher and speaker, tells might help. It's about a deacon who, for whatever reason, wasn't really doing what deacons were supposed to do. In the Baptist tradition, deacons are lay people, volunteers, who help with ministry in the congregation. But this particular one just didn't seem to be stepping up to the plate. The pastor of the church became quite frustrated and finally assigned the deacon the job of driving the youth group to the local nursing home one Sunday afternoon a month, when the kids offered a worship service for the residents. You could at least do that, the pastor said. So the deacon did. The first Sunday, he stood leaning against the wall in the back of the community room with his arms crossed, watching the youth do their thing up front. All of a sudden, he felt someone tugging on his arm. It was an old man in a wheelchair next to him. The old man seemed to want to hold the deacon's hand, so the deacon did for the whole service. That happened every single month after. The deacon would deliver the youth group, go stand in the back of the room, and hold the old man in the wheelchair's hand, month after month, like clockwork. And then one Sunday afternoon, the old man wasn't there in the community room. The deacon asked after him, and an aide shared that he was not able to get out of bed. He's dying, she said, but go and see him. Down the hall, right-hand side, third door. The deacon found the old man, whose name he had never learned. The man looked peaceful lying there in bed, but it was clear from his shallow breathing that his earthly pilgrimage soon would be over. The deacon went to the bedside, took the old man's hand, and prayed. Prayed for the angels to come greet him, prayed for God to receive one of his beloved sheep, prayed for him to be whole and well in God's kingdom. As soon as the deacon finished, the old man, his eyes still closed, squeezed his hand. The deacon left the room and passed by a woman standing outside the door who had been watching all of this. She whispered, "He's been waiting for you, you know." "What do you mean?" the deacon asked. "That's my father in there," she answered, "and he told me he didn't want to die until he had the chance to hold hands with Jesus one more time." The deacon, by now, looked very confused, so the woman continued. "My father said that once a month, Jesus came to this place. He would take my hand and hold it for a whole hour, he told me. And I want to hold Jesus' hand again before I die." That deacon put flesh and blood on Jesus, gave Jesus hands and feet and a heart in and for this world, made Jesus real, tangible, touchable. And it made a difference. That's our commission too. We followers of Jesus are his body in the world. We are forgiven, fed, and blessed in this place, and then sent out those doors back there, sent out those doors down there to make Christ known. We are called to put flesh and blood on Jesus, to give him hands and feet and hearts to work with, to be Christ for our neighbors and our enemies as we encounter Christ in them. What a privilege. What a responsibility. What a joy.